Welcome to Lamestream here on the 440 Sports Network. My name is Braden Gall. You can follow me on Twitter.com at Braden Gall.
My name is Steve Cavendish. You can follow me on Twitter, X, Blue Sky, Instagram, wherever you want to, at Scavendish. If you like this show, the one you're listening to right now, you can rate it, review it, subscribe to it. All of those things help people find us. But most importantly, just tell somebody that you listen to Lamestream Sports and they should too.
Our guest today on the show, Alex Doherty of basically every media entity in town covering the National Predators. But because now he's at the big one, of course, if that's what you want to call it. The Tennessean, the paper of record in the city of Nashville. He has joined the Tennessean. And you're going to hear exactly how he got the job, which I think is a really good turn of events for Preds fans, honestly. So really fun conversation with Alex. Always enjoy talking with him. Smart guy. Excellent coverage on the Nashville Predators. What exactly is coming from the Tennessean and exactly why he thinks that he can make the difference. He's going to single-handedly save the paper, Steve. Did you know that?
The call is coming from inside the building. That's all I'm going to say.
Of course, we'll have a couple of recommendations a little bit later on in the pod, as usual. The trade deadline, of course, for the Nashville Predators, depending on when you're listening to this, on Friday. So hopefully you early listeners got a little nugget for you later on in the show. So, okay, before we do that, Steve Cavendish of the Nashville Banner. Sign up for good journalism, nashvillebanner.com. Lamestream Sports podcast about national sports media business is brought to you by
8th and also Roast.
8th and also. I don't know if that's in the company title, but it's over on 8th Avenue. It's also over on Charlotte Avenue. It's over at the airport. It's on West End as well now. They've got the Vanderbilt location. Go swing by any of the four locations. You've got excellent beans. The beans are excellent, Steve.
Beans are just better.
The beans are just better. And you can get them, more importantly. Look, those are great places to go hang out. You got a little work to get done. You got some time to kill in between meetings. Go check out one of their locations. Great cup of coffee. Great food options.
But you can get the beans at the K Rogers or at the Publix's or wherever it is you do your shopping.
Any grocery store near you. If they are not in the regular coffee section, make sure you check out the local section. I know at my local grocery market or store. Do people call them a market, by the way? I think it's a store, right? The grocery market. I don't know why I said that. The grocery store in my neighborhood that I shop at routinely, they are in a different location. There's a little end cap, as they say in the business, of all local products there. And I know exactly where I can go into the store, get some 8th and Roast beans. They are just better. And yes, we still have to alternate days with different beans between my wife and I to make sure that no one gets more of their own flavor of the beans. So we got to rotate, but absolutely available at grocery stores everywhere near you. So go check out 8th and Roast, man. It's great. Great company. Great local beans. And they're ethically sourced as well. How about that?
Go to 8th and Roast.
All right. We'll have some recommendations a little bit later on in the show. But here was our conversation with newly minted Tennessean reporter covering the Nashville Predators, Alex Doherty. Alex, good to have you on the show. Congratulations on the new gig, sir. How are you, man?
I'm great. How are y'all doing?
We're doing great. Not as busy as you this week heading into the trade deadline, but we'll get to that later on. Just first and foremost, tell us how this whole Tennessean thing came about, and then we'll get into your journey, because it seems like you have, in fact, almost worked for every organization covering the Nashville Predators in the city of Nashville.
Yeah, it does seem that way. Yeah, I'm working my way through all this. This is where I've landed now. It's been a few months of work. So it's kind of strange the way it started, because I didn't even know this position was open until probably the very beginning of this season. I think they had put something out about the position being open maybe in October. That sounds about right. And, you know, I'd known Paul Skrbina, who's been here since 2018. I'd known him, you know, pretty much ever since then. And he has been in the job for a while. And I think like when he originally made the announcement, it was a little unclear kind of what was going on, but it was clear that he was staying at the Tennessean, but that they needed a new beat writer for the Preds because he was going to be doing something else. And that's what the case. But anyways, so I you know, applied pretty quickly once I found out. And then it took a while, and there's a lot of bureaucracy, I guess, like process, red tape, whatever you want to call it, to like get to the point where
corporate overlordisms,
right? Where you're like talking to the right person and you've got all the stuff in the right places. And I think the turning point for me in getting the job was getting that interview and being able to convince them of how how the Tennesseans coverage should change in the new landscape of sports media. And that, I think, was not only a turning point for me. I mean, it's what landed me the job, but I think it could be a turning point for the paper and for the company. And I mean, I think anyone saying this, and I don't think they would have any problem with me saying this, anyone in this area who has been paying attention to the Tennessean and the Predators would say something's not right with the coverage, right? It's like, it's not quite where it needs to be. And it's not anything about Paul. It's not anything about individuals who are doing it. It's just like, there's something missing. It's like, there seemed to be a lack of maybe visibility or consistency, something in the coverage that was always there or that has been missing for a while. And I basically went in and was like, hey, this needs to be changed and here's how I can do it. So I think that's why I'm here now, I think.
All right. Well, then give us, without giving away the entire transcript of the interview, what are the bullet points of the pitch saying, look, this is how it needs to be done. And because I think most everyone would agree, fans, media, et cetera, would agree with your basic premise,
right,
of the situation.
Okay. So a lot of it's going to seem obvious to people who probably listen to your show seem obvious to people if you're listening to Lamestream, if you're listening to this show, you know, like, the ins and outs of all this different stuff. But like, it's hard to really communicate that in big, big media companies like this, like, it just doesn't, these things are not obvious to a lot of people. You kind of get in these places where you're kind of doing the same thing the same way, covering the team the same way every year. And then you wake up and it's 10 years later and you've missed like entire avenues of how to cover a team. And the main thing is social media. I mean, I think that the way the Tennessean covered the team from a social media perspective was just like almost not at all. I mean, it was just like not even there. The writers were on Twitter. Individual writers were on social media platforms doing some things, but from a perspective of like the brand being out there and saying, we're going to cover this team this way. We're going to talk to players. We're going to get post game. We're going to do daily coverage from a social media perspective. That was lacking. And that's one thing that I think I've grown like a personal brand I brought to the table was, okay, I have a following of some pretty loyal Preds fans. I've got a knack for some social media stuff. What if we had a Tennessean branded Preds focus? You know, like we have in the works right now an Instagram page that's just going to be Preds. Because we're really big into Instagram here. So I think hitting that is hard. And I think there's a ton of sports fans who are on Instagram who want to consume sports content on there. You know, it's not, I mean, the number of people that are using Instagram on a daily basis are not people who are going to the Tennessean to like see what the latest articles are. So you've got to bring the content to them and just be like, hey, here's some fun stuff that you can live on this app. You don't have to go to Tennessean's website to read it. You can live it, look at it here, and we build an audience that way. And I think that's the biggest thing is the social media aspect. Podcasting is probably down the road, but like that's going to be a thing too. Like getting a solid, not to creep onto your area here, but hey, that I think.
Yes. Yes, podcasting is the corner solely owned by Braden, and no one else can be on it.
Yeah, okay. No, you pipe down over there. You're trying to do the same thing, big guy. All right.
Exactly. Yeah.
You're all following my lead. I invented podcasts.
It does matter that, you know, the biggest paper in town has a podcast about the team. You know, I think.
Yeah.
Or at least about hockey, which is kind of where I'm going to go with it. But
this is me nodding my head vigorously. So there is a horror movie trope, and you see it kind of most famously, or I guess recently, in The Scream. And it's the call is coming from inside the house.
Yeah.
And when I heard that you had gotten the gig covering the club, my first thought was, holy shit, someone who came from on the forecheck and other places is now the mainstream beat writer for the paper record here in town, and the call is coming from inside the house. Holy shit.
That's really funny. You know what's funny is that has been a common. I've heard that same not that trope. No one's used your metaphor there. But, I have heard that from a lot of people who have reached out ever since I took the job, saying I'm really glad that they finally have given the job to someone who is local, who has been around the team for a long time, who has covered it for a while, and also knows the ins and outs of the area I mean, I'm in native Nashvillean, and I think, yeah, you're right. Like I guess I didn't really think about it like that. I just thought, hey, they need someone with experience covering the Predators, and I have that. But that has been really interesting to hear. A lot of people were happy about that because I guess if you track the practices of this company for over the many years, it wasn't always like that. Like, they were getting outside hires or people who just had the credentials but didn't have the knowledge of the local team.
No, I mean, you don't have to agree with this or whatever else, but I mean, your company has been allergic to hiring anybody from Middle Tennessee for a long time. And so I was super glad to see this, and just generally thrilled that they had somebody who was familiar with the team. And I don't even mean that as like some kind of backhanded thing at Paul, because Paul did a good job covering the Preds. I mean,
yeah,
I'm a fan of some of his work. It's just, I was really glad to see that this was the focus, was that they turned to someone who knew the team intimately in mm-hmm. order to provide the coverage, because you're right. I mean, it's not like the Tennessean doesn't have to fight for audience anymore. I mean, it's no longer sort of like the big land on your doorstep first thing in the morning, all other media follows us sort of thing.
Right.
You really have, to your point, you really have to carve out audience now in ways that didn't exist before.
You have to. And by the way, I hope there's there's now some pressure on me, because if I'm the one of the first local hires and I screw it up, then
you're going to fuck it up for everybody, buddy.
You did already say that the entire future of the Tennessean hinges on you. You did already say that in this interview. So I would like to point that out.
Maybe even the future of Gannett Corporation in general. So
yeah, maybe
great.
the whole thing. You mentioned a bunch of different ways. Like, I think it's taken a long time for people to realize, I think in traditional media, to realize that your audience on YouTube is not the same person who's consuming your content, even in a digital form, like a modernized, forward-thinking digital formats. Your podcast audience is different than your YouTube audience, which is different than your Instagram audience, which is certainly different than the people that are reading, 1,000 words on X.
Right.
Not the account, not the stupid application, but like whatever, XYZ. You know what I mean?
Oh, right. Yes.
sorry. Fucking Elon. So I'm curious, like, you say you have a knack for a certain type of content, and you can't always just like not know who the Chicago Blackhawks general manager is. So what is the, give us sort of your guiding principles for each of the different places. Like, you hey, this is what I want to try to execute when I write a story. This is what I want to execute to build an audience with Instagram. This is the kind of audience, you do radio as well. Like, what you're talking about, audio formats. What are sort of going to be your guiding principles, and how are they different?
Wow, that's a really good question. I don't know I can really give you a solid answer, but I think, okay, so let's start with the print part. Like, the writing part, I think, is actually probably one of the easiest ones, because, well, it's been around longer. And so I've been reading sports articles and news, whatever, for almost 40 years now. So, like, I kind of understand how that's supposed to work and what that's supposed to look like. And for the most part, I don't think a lot of that's going to change. I mean, you can see some of the stuff I've put out over the last couple of weeks. Like, it's pretty standard stuff. I mean, I want to try to work in some more interesting stories and some angles that maybe people weren't thinking of just based on my experience. That part, I don't know, is going to be too world changing. I think the difference is going to be in providing like a video component that I think people are yearning for on specifically Instagram. And I think that's the big thing. YouTube is, yeah, you're right. YouTube is very different, and YouTube's super hard to land an audience there. But Instagram right now seems to be like one of the ways you can grow the quickest. TikTok maybe too. That one is a little harder, but I think my guiding principle is, first of all, what would I want to watch? What would I, if I was a fan, if I was sitting in the stands and I would just watch that game, what would I want to hear from this particular player? What nugget would I want to like take away? I don't want to hear all the noise about getting pucks deep and all that, but like, what's the one thing that I do want to hear? And so like, when I go to a post game, I'm looking for like a 10 second or a 15 second thing that like I could craft a story around, or at least I could put out there and say like, hey, this is really interesting. Listen to what Jakob Trenin had to say about when he jumped into the glass, or most recently with UC Saros and that crazy bounce off the glass. Like, we talked to Forsberg, we talked to Ryan O'Reilly, we talked to UC Saros, and all of them said basically the same thing. But what I thought was the most interesting was, had he ever seen that before? What was his perspective on that? And so that was the only thing I even put out there, because you could put, you know, 20 minutes of post-game content out there, people aren't going to watch it. But if you find like a 30-second, here's the one thing you might want to know about what happened in this game, I think that's the best idea. And I like to create original stuff, like where I've gone in. I made a video when I was with Penalty Box Radio asking them, like, what was their highlight of 2023? What's the best thing you remember from 2023? And I just kind of put that together, just like fun content, just because these guys have good personalities. They're fun to talk to, I think, especially now with some of these younger guys that like to be in front of the camera. Luke Evangelista is like the most, as soon as the camera starts, he's like,
he knows,
look, I'm here. Like he knows he wants,
he's got the hair all coiffed. He's ready to go.
Exactly. And so I think that's good. Like, you get those guys out there because that's the next wave. Right. So I think that's kind of the thing is I view it like, and I do this with stories too. Every piece of content that I like think about, I view it as like a raw, like a stump in the woods, like a log stump. And I've got to take that log and chip it away and find the beautiful thing that's inside it, the sculpture, you know, like I've got to take all this other stuff off that people don't care about and make it into like, you know, something that people want to look at. I think of it like sculpting, really. And so a lot of times when I get like 30 minutes of transcribed audio, I'm like, all this is dumb, but what's the one thing I can find that's interesting? And so I scrape it all away and find the one thing and be like, okay, here's what you want to know. Because as you know, like, you can't give print media, you can't give more than like 600 words unless you're really saying something big. Like, you've got to really tone it down. And then I think on digital media or on video, I guess, it's the same thing. You've got to find like the part of it that really resonates with people. So, I mean, I just over the year, I'm not perfect at it. I learn new things and I learn like what works every day. But I think that was kind of part of my pitch, is like, I have a pretty good sense of like what people are going to engage with and what people are going to react to and want to share with other people. That's a big thing too. So that's kind of where I come with that.
What's the cycle of what you're writing? Because so it used to be that you know, before the Tennesseans print deadlines changed radically here a few years ago, mm-hmm. I mean, you would be doing gamers that would end up in the paper. You'd be doing features, doing whatever else. Gamers are only going online right now.
Right.
Because if something ends up in the paper, you know, 2 days afterwards, mm-hmm. you know, from 3 nights ago, it's just kind of garbage. What are the, how are you kind of like dividing your time of what you're writing between like, what do I have to file for the web that night versus what's a feature that I'm going to write that may end up in print versus, you know, versus kind of other sort of pieces. I mean, like Instagram or like whatever else that you're trying to do.
Yeah. Well, I'm still trying to figure that out. That is something that comes with joining a big media company for the first time. Like, I've never been in this big of a company, right? I think I've been able to work with my editors here and figure out a pattern that works. Basically, I just try to find one thing about a game. I'm not putting out, like game recaps and here's who scored and when, and here's the final score. Here's how many saves the goalie had.
No, AI is going to do that for you.
Exactly. Right. No one wants, if people want that, they're going to find that in 20 seconds somewhere else. Right. So what I try to do is just kind of what I described a second ago, like find the one thing that like sticks out. I mean, the other night it was easy. That crazy bounce off the glass that where that puck went in, right, in weird way. That was it. I knew as soon as that happened, like, this is going to be the thing, because it doesn't even matter how this game ends. I'm either going to say Preds overcome insane bounce and, you know, and continue their winning streak, or their winning streak ends on this like insanely unlucky bounce off the glass. So like, I knew that was it, but like, sometimes it's hard because there are hockey games that are just duds in more than one way and you can't find anything. And you're like, okay, well, I guess I just say something about how, you know, Philip Forsberg played well, but the team lost. So it's not always easy. So the answer is I'm still trying to figure that out. I try not to, I'm not really worried about the print part. They kind of were like, you know, that'll come, you'll figure out the patterns there. And the features are almost always going to be, have some shelf life to where it's not like once it's printed, it's off the table. But I do, the other thing is I'm having to write in a way to prepare for that, you know, like saying things like, not saying things like yesterday, but saying like Monday instead, you know, that kind of thing, which is easy. That as soon as I was like, oh yeah, that makes sense, I got to do that. Yeah. That was probably just bad habits in writing anyways, but.
It's bad habits in podcasting as well.
Right.
You got to label everything Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, the trade deadline on Friday, depending on when you're listening to this. Look, you bring up, and I am utterly fascinated with the Ouroboros of like audience desires versus content creation and delivery mechanism. And there's a tension there between, you've already alluded to all of this, the style. You got to strip it all down, make it the 22nd simplest possible thing that creates engagement, that people want to share, that makes it easy for people to digest. Obviously right now there are very few places, podcasts and YouTube are probably two of them, where you get to actually do the deeper stuff, all the long form deep stuff. So how do you create, or I guess how do you personally handle, and some people, it doesn't even cross their mind, they don't care about the long form, they don't care about going deeper, but being a great reporter is also about presenting things to people that they didn't know that they wanted, that they didn't know I needed to know this about this player or this team. And those are great feature, those turn into great feature stories or great long form conversations. How do you like balance the tension of, all right, I know this does well on Instagram because it's a very clicky thing, versus, man, this is a really complicated, nuanced part of Andrew Burnett's system that really is working well right now, and it's actually the reason the team has won 8 straight games or whatever. Like, how do you balance those two things? Because it's not unique to the Tennessean. It's not unique to any one particular radio station or even one medium. It is this balance of in-depth nutritional content versus like these quick bite-sized empty calories. And I don't think as a fan you can survive on empty calories, but maybe I'm wrong on that.
Yeah. I think it's, the challenge is when you put something out, you want people to listen to it, or at least check it out. You want people to give you a chance, like hear this story for me. And if you don't deliver, if you don't deliver on that every time, like, you start to lose people a little bit. So if you put stuff out that's like, and some of this is just feeding the machine, right? But if you put stuff out all the time, that's just like, here's a low calorie, as you talked about, piece of content. If you do 10 of those and then one like really quality nutritional, here's a really interesting, fun story that you should really check out and spend time on, you're not going to get the bang for your buck. Like, there's going to be less people to check that out.
Yep.
It's really hard. I think and having only been in this position for less than 2 weeks, like, I think I'm still kind of figuring that out. But how I treated it at Penalty Box and at A to Z was I just tried my best to put something to space it out to some extent, and maybe to kind of prepare people, like, here's what I'm working on, here's this big story I think you're going to enjoy, tease it a little bit. And then also, there was kind of an old adage. I used to be a teacher way back when I first got out of college. I taught high school, and this sounds really simple, but it's true. One thing that happens to teachers when they first get in the classroom is, like, they repeat themselves a lot. Is the, like, they'll say something, and then, like, some kids weren't listening, and so you have to say it again, and then other kids are not listening, so you have to say it again. You say things like 6 times in a row. And this, like, advisor that I had, or whatever you call them, like a teacher helper person, was like, when you speak, they should listen. And so, and it was really simple. It was really an easy way of putting it. But I was like, what do you mean? She was like, when you speak, they should listen. And so you have to kind of, like, this is in the teaching aspect, but you wait, you get their attention, you pause, you give everyone a chance to say, and then you go. And so I kind of take that into to this world, where it's like, if I just, like, keep shouting the same story over and over again, maybe it'll get lost, or maybe people ignore it. But, like, if you really give people a chance to listen, or if you wait for them to hear you, they will hear you. And I know it's kind of it's a really ephemeral kind of way of looking at it, but I just think about it like, if I don't want to just keep repeating myself with the same story, I want to really gather people's attention to a certain point and be like, okay, now here's what you need. This is the thing that you want to listen to right now.
And I'm like, how do you, I'm thinking about my wife, like, how do I do that in between the swipe, right?
Right.
Like, I don't know how that works, but hard, God, yeah. Godspeed.
yeah, that's hard. Yeah.
Have you had a moment yet, because you are at, I mean, the Tennessean is a much bigger outlet, where you were like, oh, that's a lot more people kind of paying attention to this, or I hadn't, you know, this sector of the fan base or whatever else is listening or is absorbing or kind of reading my content now?
Not yet. But I have had some people reach out and say, like, well, in my personal life, like, I've had people who didn't even know that I had anything to do with writing about hockey, or that anything about me at all, who, like, texted me and were like, are you writing for the newspaper now? And I was like, have you not been paying attention to, like, anything I've talked about for the last, like, 10 years? And then they're like, because I saw your name on the thing about this, about the Predators. And I was like, yep, that's where I am. Yep, that's what I'm doing. So, like, it's more like that kind of stuff, where it's like people who should have already known are just now coming online about what I've been doing. So I haven't gotten any feedback directly from, like, longtime Tennessean people, but I anticipate that'll happen. I know what the numbers are, and I know, like, kind of where they've been and where I've gone in the last, like, couple weeks now, and I think it's heading in the right direction. So I haven't gotten anything directly about that, but I think that'll come.
Working in sports sometimes with your friends and family is, like, the most humbling thing in the world, because, like, my buddy, who knows what I do and knows what I've done for 20 plus years, and he's like, what do you think about this, and this about the Tennessee Vols or something? And I'm like, if only I had spent hours this week discussing this exact topic, you would know exactly what it is we think and not need to text me for my opinion about it. But anyway,
it's so humbling. Like, okay. So the Predators and the U2 story, the YouTube canceled show and all that, like, I've been consumed with that story ever since it came out, right? Two or three weeks long. I mean, just, I thought it was the most fascinating thing that Barry Trotz could have ever done. I mean, it was just such a cool story, I thought.
He had to give the 6-year-old a spanking. It happens sometimes.
I know, right? I'm going to turn this plane around. But
put on your hoodie belts. Yeah.
But then, like, after the story's, like, basically over, we squeezed all the juice out of it, it's done, then people are like, hey, you might want to check in on this U2 thing with the Predators, because I hear that they canceled a show or canceled a trip. And I'm just like, yeah,
oh my God.
I heard about that.
That's great.
I've had 4 articles, 16 Instagram posts, 4 stories, 3 reels, a TikTok. 47 tweets. Exactly. You didn't see any of this?
Yeah. It's like, oh my gosh, come on.
That story though is sort of endlessly fascinating. I tweeted something about that. I said they should cancel a show. They should cancel a YouTube trip every week until the Stanley Cup final.
Yeah.
And like that's the thing that people on Twitter were like, aha. Yes. Yes.
Well, yes. So it's actually perfect. That story is like a perfect microcosm of everything we've just talked about, because mm-hmm. while yeah. I too, yeah. even though I claim to be the long form, you know, nuanced guy, like I too am obsessed with the story, but I'm obsessed with the story because it's the story. Not yeah. if this makes sense, like I'm obsessed with the story because it's a story, not because of what actually happened. Like yeah, it was, and this actually leads us into our next conversation about the new regime and how they're communicating with the press and with their fans. It was Barry Trotz. This was a PR move by Barry Trotz. Eventually, I don't know if he exactly wanted it out, but once it was out, he viewed it as a PR opportunity to send a message to both his team and his fans, and that. There, once that happened, it was no longer about the concert or traveling or costs or like I know the Preds get these tickets at super discounted rates. Like it wasn't that big of a deal one way or the other, but Barry Trotz used it as an opportunity to create a PR conversation, and I think that is what is fascinating to me about it. And apparently, eight wins later, it might have worked. So
you're exactly right, and that's a level of thinking about the story that. You make both of you make and that I made, but like communicating that's kind of hard. Although, like I was talking with someone. I think you're right. You nailed it about this story. I was talking to someone in the Preds organization. Like, do you think that they wanted this out, or do you think that they wanted this story to leak? And the person was like, "Well, not exactly, but." Barry Trotz wasn't upset that it was leaked.
Yep.
And I was like, yep. Exactly.
Exactly.
That, like they wanted it out there, but they couldn't do it a certain way. And they wanted it to be, you know, a very public, like, this is what we're doing.
Yep. So that brings us to the new regime. And I'm curious, like having covered much more closely than even Andrew Burnett, covering Peter Laviolette as closely as I did, certainly a different communicator than any of these other people. But David Poile, sort of a certain personality type. You got John Hines, certain personality type. Andrew Burnett, now Barry Trotz. Barry Trotz, of course, has I almost want to tell him to, like, if I was his PR team, like, guys, just tone it down. Like, you don't have to give every possible detail about everything. But that is really good for the fans and really good for the press. So what is your take on the new regime and their communication style, and how is that going to benefit the audience and maybe your role?
Well, it's great. So far, Barry Trotz is like one of the most entertaining people to talk to. He's always been that way, but he gives you a lot, and you have to figure out how can I turn this into a story that's like, you know, consumable for people who don't know everything about the team. I got a one-on-one with him Tuesday, and he gave me a lot of stuff, and I was like, I can't put this all in there. It's just too long, but. So Barry Trotz from a media perspective is great. Like I don't think there's any GM in the league that would be better. I mean, no other GM in the league just like goes on radio and does like one-on-ones with media, like all the time. Like some of them, it's just like, you talk to them like three times a year and that's it.
Colton Sissons had a tummy ache on Tuesday, and Philip Forsberg has a cut on his finger, but we'll tell you more about that tomorrow.
That cut thing was really funny. We were joking about that after the game. Like, It was a little curious because he was like, he has a cut. It's in an area that's hard to heal, and it's not keeping him out of game. So there was a lot of like, where is this cut? you can imagine where a bunch of
off the record.
Yeah, off the record. Yeah. So, anyways, the other thing I was going to add was Brunette has been great too. I think the cool thing about Brunette is he's been pretty open about like saying things like, I don't really know these guys either. I'm still trying to learn like certain guys. Like he said this about Tomasino a lot. Like, I'm not, you know, Tomasino is a guy that I've only known for, you know, half a year. So it's like, I'm still trying to figure out what makes him tick. Is it being scratched that will get him going? Is it playing him more minutes? Is it playing him less minutes? So he's been honest about like his learning curve with this first job. So I've enjoyed working with him as well.
Well, we've got the answer on that question.
Right.
I mean, we have pretty mercilessly criticized the Preds regime, past regime, for, I don't know, lots of different things, but media handling being the main one. Are you surprised by the newer, open, more open Preds, and do they have to be this way right now? I mean, they've had a shitty couple of seasons. I mean, mm-hmm. which led to sort of regime change at the top anyway. But do they need people to like them again?
That's exactly how I would describe it. They need people to like them again. Yeah, I think they went through a phase of like gatekeeping, and we're on top of the world, so you come to us and we might give you what you want, that kind of thing. I think they've changed their tune on that, because they realized, I mean, I think the pandemic was a big part of it, because they lost so much revenue, and it was they need the attention again. And you can add in there a regime change that is more transparent and more in the public and familiar, because Trotz is just so, like, I mean, everyone knows him and everyone likes him. Poyle has been around more, actually. I've seen him around a lot. Yeah. And he's even more, now that he's not like in the official job, he's just like, we were talking with him. We were going through the little puck wall, you know, the alumni puck wall. And I was just like, remember this guy? What was the deal with him? And he was like, oh yeah, he was injured. And then he was, you know, he's giving us information about guys that, like, you never would have gotten before. So it's even gotten to that. So yeah, I think overall the organization is much more willing to work with people, and not just people who are in the media sphere. I think they're willing to work with anybody as long as it gets them eyeballs.
35 years of not having to do that anymore. It'll make your shoulders a little lighter all the time. There's no question about that for Poyle. What's funny is I think it's a combination of everything, but like they got real high on their own supply in 2017. There's no question. And they came down off that high and landed in a pandemic. And then the hockey team wasn't good. And by not good, I mean like average. And the worst thing you can be in sports is sort of like average. Like being super terrible creates interest. Being super great creates interest, but being in the middle is sort of like this weird purgatory. So I think that ultimately is where they are, but we'll see what happens the rest of the year. This is before the deadline. And if you listen and you're an early listener to the show, you'll get this nugget here. So predictions on the trade deadline, how many players are gone? I assume UC Saros is going to be in town. He's not going anywhere, but what about the rest of the names? Give me like three names. Are they moving Carrier? Are they moving Trennan? Who are they moving?
Yeah, I think it's looking like they might move one of those two. So Carrier and or Trennan.
Lankinen?
I don't think Lankinen. No, he's too. I think he's just all like right. He's cheap, and they might as well keep him. And I wouldn't be surprised if they sign him this summer too, if they move Saros. So I think the most likely is Carrier. But here's the thing: I don't think they should trade Carrier, because if they want to make the playoffs, he's their best penalty killing defenseman. Like, he's their top guy, and he's really good at it. And he's, you know, him and Lozon have been a great pairing this year. I don't think they should move him, especially because, like, I don't think they'd get more than like maybe a third round pick, maybe a second round pick. But what are they going to do with that? I mean, that second or third round pick is going to do maybe pan out 5 years down the road. I just think, like, they'd much rather keep him, possibly sign him, and rather than just get like one draft pick for him, I don't see it. Oh. And the same thing with Trennan. Like, Trennan would be even less of a return. And they, you know, they're still playing pretty well. I kind of don't see much of a move. I think if anything, they don't make many moves.
And they do have like 11 second round picks coming up this summer. So they do. They could package like 14 third round picks to get like a first round pick. That's what they could do. All right. Well, hey, Alex, thank you so much, man. Congratulations on the new gig. Enjoy the work. And let's see if this team can make the playoffs, enjoy the trade deadline, et cetera, et cetera. Thank you for coming on, man. We appreciate it.
Of course. Thanks a lot.
That was Alex Doherty of The Tennessean. I could have said of the multiple other outlets over the years, but he has, and he's had a very interesting journey. We didn't actually get into his background as a teacher, although he mentioned it. He also is working for like a trading card company as well. Like, he's just done a bunch of really interesting things and has And because of his connection with the Nashville Predators audience and honestly putting in a lot of effort to be everywhere the Nashville Predators are, I think he's parlayed it into an excellent new spot and a new job. And I think Predators fans are going to be better off for it. And all joking aside, I think the Tennessean took his advice and is going to be better off for it.
It would have been impolite to ask this question of Alex, but do you think that they finally pulled the trigger on this hire, because it looks like they might make the playoffs?
Oh God, that is very cynical.
These are just questions.
If the job
these
was
are
open,
only questions.
Go to Eighth and Roast.
The answer may be no.
Go to Eighth and Roast.
It might be no.
If the job was open in October, I would say no. Especially opening the job in October on a team that you was not projected to make the playoffs.
You don't think maybe the corporate bean counters were like, well, you know, we're not going to really need somebody here if they don't make the playoffs. So
you're so negative.
I'm just saying, you know, save 6 months of salary.
I'm going to go with what Alex has to say. And Alex said that this was a longer process, that he's been going through this process for a while, well before the 8-game winning streak happened like 2 weeks ago. So just chill out. Okay. I'm as cynical as it gets, but that's really cynical.
You're welcome. I think the term is you're welcome.
Thank you to Alex for hanging out, and go check out his work. I do want to talk about the tensions there in just a second, because it's something I personally struggle with in a really big way. But go to Eighth and Roast, something I do not struggle with at all. Best beans in the city. Go to Eighth and Roast. Great place to get some coffee. Great place to get a little bite to eat. Great place to get some work done. We have a gathering with one of my other shows, which hope you know I've heard you enjoy as well. First Tuesday of every month over there on the 8th Avenue location. Myself and Jamie Holland and the Pod Bless Nashville crew, we're always over there on the first Tuesday of every month on the Charlotte location. You can get their beans everywhere around the city, and they're just good people, man. Good fun locations: Airport, West End, 8th Avenue, Charlotte, and everywhere beans are sold in grocery stores near you.
Go to 8th and Roast.
Do you personally, you're on Instagram, and I don't think I've ever said this or had this story, but now it's like, because we already joked about it with Alex, like I do feel like, you know, in like the apocalypse movies, there's always like one scientist running through the town or through the group of people or through the friends that's just being like, no, a meteor's coming, or no, a volcano's coming, or the storm of the century is coming and the whole world is going to end. And everyone looks at them like they're completely crazy until about the 30-minute mark of the movie, when like the world starts to end. I feel like I am taking crazy pills, because
it's the dog in the horror movie who's like, hey, yeah. There's the mummy, and he's walking down the street, and he's wrapped in toilet paper,
and he's just barking.
And you should be running out of here. And people are like, shut up, dog. And he's like, no, really? You should be running for your life right now. And he's like, no.
He keeps barking at you to get out of the way of the guy with the chainsaw until he's too close, and then he just runs away. And he's like, fine, screw you guys. I'm getting out of here. But
I'm getting out of here because I can, and I'm smart enough to do it.
It's like a true... And I say this a little tongue-in-cheek, so don't take it super seriously, but I really do feel like the crazy person in my friend group, where I'm just like, they send a link on Instagram, I'm not going to click on it. They say, like, I don't look at it. I don't enjoy it. It makes me feel bad. It's not my thing. It's performative. I get that there's funny things on the internet, Steve. I understand. There's funny, talented people doing funny, interesting, talented things on the internet.
Your Instagram feed is like your Twitter feed, is like whatever else in social media. It's how you tune it.
No, it absolutely is. I agree with your point, but video has a different effect on the human brain than print. It just does. And I don't like how it makes me feel. And I feel crazy for saying that. Don't judge me.
I like the fact that when I wake up at 2 a.m., because my brain has turned on.
Read a book, dude.
I can't turn on the light.
Yeah, that's fair.
That would upset my spouse.
That's fair.
That I can sit there and watch videos of post-punk clips from the 80s and see like, you know, the Smiths performing on John Peel's show. Okay, I mean, that's awesome, and that's what I get in my Instagram feed.
Look, and I'm sure small doses of heroin is good for you. I'm sure. But like small doses.
Just a little taste.
No, look, I think, and here's ultimately the thing, and it's probably because I'm too too deep in the weeds of like studying the court cases at the federal level and etc. Like this is not me saying this. This is the companies. This is Meta saying this. They have documents, thousands of pages of documents that indicate that cigarettes are killing people. That is what they have. And they have that about their own product. They've known about it forever and they don't do anything about it. They keep making it worse. So one of the few times I will ever agree with Marsha Blackburn, which is maybe some of these kids shouldn't have access to all this stuff. And I'm not saying it's exactly right or the bill is in the exact right place, or I'm not saying that the language is correct, or like, we're not going to have a discussion about how it should be implemented, but there's evidence, there's scientific evidence that this is destroying our children. And as a father of two daughters, I care about it a lot. And I'm the crazy person now. About 10 years from now, everyone's gonna be like, oh, that crazy guy was right.
Woof.
All right.
Woof.
Speaking of thoughtful, nuanced, long form content.
Wow.
What's your recommendation?
Here on the 440 Network, there's a little show called Pod Bless Nashville, which one of us may be on frequently. Or, you know, every episode.
I'm there every time. You're on occasionally.
I'm on occasionally. Yeah. There's an interview with Stephen Hale this week. Stephen Hale is a Banner reporter. And I mean, you know, that's great and everything. But Stephen Hale is one of my favorite people in the world. He's just, he is an incredibly thoughtful guy. And he has a book out now. The book comes out next week. It is about him. Is about covering executions and death row here in Tennessee. He was the reporter for me who went and witnessed executions, It fucked him up. It was a profoundly kind of disturbing experience, and he writes about that in the book, and he writes about a lot of different aspects, including the tension between, you know, the victims of these horrible people that have done things that have done heinous crimes, and at the same time they're humans. And I was particularly struck about in this interview where he was relaying the story of one person that he talked to on death row who said, you know, I'm not the same person that was, you know, 40 years ago sentenced to die. And it's a really good interview. Go buy the book. I'm just going to shill for him and his book here for the next couple of weeks.
Death Row Welcomes You is the name of the book. Tell people the name of the book.
Death Row Welcomes You.
Google it and get it anywhere, but go to Parnassus or go to a local bookshop and order it.
And if you want to, I think there might be a couple of tickets left. There's an event at Parnassus on the 22nd, where Dimitri Kaladimos, also of the Banner, is in conversation with Stephen about the book. Dimitri has, and he talks about this in your PBN interview. She spent a lot of time covering these issues as well. It's going to be a great discussion. Come out, get your book signed, and just, if you do nothing else, buy the book, and it's not a super long read, but it is just, man, I loved it. I'm incredibly proud of him for doing it. I think anybody who can pull off writing a book and it be good has my, you know, just complete and utter admiration. And I'm excited for him. So there you go. Go buy the book. Go listen to the pod. It's a good pod.
This is the most insular recommendation of all time. You're promoting your reporter.
I'm promoting my reporter and your show. Podcast. You're welcome, everyone.
I like that. No, he is. You can tell in the conversation that this has had a major effect on him. We talk a lot about it, but also I think there's a he finds this really fascinating community of people that exist in this very, like a surprising location. Like it's just this humanity exists in this place you would never expect it to, and I think he does a really great job of sort of displaying and portraying all sides of it, and it does create a natural tension between the crime, the victims, the people that are going through this, and frankly, attention. It should create attention between everybody in our community and what we are doing in the criminal justice system. That there, that is ultimately an important tension that he wants to get across as well. So it's and to do it well, to do it well, and to do it with grace, I think is the most difficult aspect of all of it. And I'm about 80 pages in, and he did a great job. It's really, really good. I highly recommend go check it out. Obviously he's going to now be on the criminal justice public safety beat for you guys, and crime beat. So go check him out now. All of his new work back into the, a newsman can't leave the news. Can't do it. He's back. So go check him out there. I'm also going to recommend a book. Jason Kirk, of course, who's been a longtime college football writer and personality, a guy that I've known for a little while, put out his book. I want to say this came out. I want to say the pre-order just ended, and all the money, all the proceeds went to the Trevor Project on the pre-order side of things, but you can still go buy the book and support it. It's called Hell is a World Without You. It is a novel. I imagine he's pulling a lot of this stuff from his own upbringing, of course, but it is fascinating because it's sort of like this satirical and hilarious and very honest look at a evangelical childhood. And as someone who went to a lot of like Young Life things in high school, and like on the third page, he uses the phrase iron kids bread. And I was like, I'm here and I'm at home. He talks about Pizza Hut buffets and Mario Kart parties. And as a 41-year-old who grew up in the 90s, it absolutely hits real hard.
I was going to say, this is your sweet spot, isn't it?
This hits real hard. Hell is a World Without You. It's a fun, light read. It's very funny. My 7-year-old and I have like reading time, and she was reading her book and I'm reading my book, and I start laughing, and she's like, "What are you laughing at, Dad?" And I can't explain the adolescent puberty sexuality joke that Jason Kirk makes in on page 26 or whatever. But I was like, "Honey, it's satire. I'll explain later when you're older." It's Jason really,
Jason is a really good follow on social media. He's been a very good follow on Twitter for years. I would never tell somebody to get onto Twitter, but at the same time, if you're there, Jason's a really good follow.
He's over at Blue Sky doing all that same stuff. Come on over. Water's warm. Come hang out in the sunlight with us over at Blue Sky. Okay. Come hang out.
I have one other thing here. That's like, it's not really a recommendation, but it's more of just kind of a question.
Ethan Roast is delicious. Yes.
Yes, Ethan Roast is delicious.
Asked and answered.
If at what point, if you're watching a TV show and you're watching a TV show that you really like, and then you start to realize, maybe this is not that good anymore. And then you start to realize, oh shit, it's taken a really hard turn for the bad. My wife and I were watching this show on BritBox called The Bay, and the first two seasons of it, really good. And by seasons, I mean, it's like British seasons. So it's like four episodes. So it's like a really low lift, four episodes or six episodes, something like that. By the end of it, we were hate watching it. But there's like four seasons of it, and we're kind of completists anyway, because you get into something and you're like, wait a minute, I'm invested, I'm gonna go ahead and watch this to the end. We were literally hate watching the finale of the last season.
Yeah.
So at what point do you call it? Do you say nope, I'm out, and we stop watching it? Or If you have something that you really love, and these first two seasons I absolutely loved. They were well written. The acting was very good. The main character, the main character changes from season two to season three, and I think that was part of it. I just didn't like this actress who was the lead as much as the previous kind of detective sergeant in there.
I think there's tiers to answer your question. There's a handful of shows, and one of them was partly the pandemic, but like I watched Suits like all the way to the end.
Yeah.
Like all
Suits
the way.
Suits is a hard watch there in like season eight.
But so I would say it wasn't hate watching. It was sort of like, I'm doing this out of like muscle memory, I think. I don't know. Like, I watched
a lot of second screen time. Like,
I watched the
eighth and ninth season of
Suits. Yeah, the whole, I mean,
you want to get to the finale, but how it ends.
Right. Yeah. And so that's one that I would put in the middle of, like, still, I was vested enough that I needed to see it through, but could tell that I really didn't like it all that much. There's the other end of that spectrum, which is what's the Showtime show with Emma Stone that's like extremely deadpan comedy? So my wife was out. I can't remember what it's called, but it's like, it's all about this.
I'm with your wife. I was out.
You watched one episode and like what left, and I stuck through, and actually it got so much better that I appreciated it. But to answer your question, and you're not going to like this, if it's really, really, really god awful bad, the writing, the acting, the script, the plot, everything is really bad, that's when I tap out. And I tapped out after the second episode of the second season of Reacher. I said, this is terrible. I can't do it. I watched the first season.
It's a terrible take.
I was like, all right.
This is an awful take of yours.
I got to the second episode of the second season, and it was so bad that my...
Just a terrible, terrible
take. Here's the deal. Here's how we wrap this conversation up. I went from second screening that show to reading a book. Okay. That's how bad it was. And that's the great way to end the conversation. Special thanks to Alex Doherty, of course, and make sure you go swing by 8th and Roast. But go put down Instagram and read a fucking book. Death Row welcomes you, and Hell is a World Without You. Two great books that will make your brain feel better. It'll make you laugh. It'll make you think about things. Two very different styles of read. But go check them both out. Death Row welcomes you, and Hell is a World Without You. Two excellent books. Highly recommend. And it's way, way better than doom scrolling on social media. For Steve Cavendish, I am Braden Gall. Thank you all for listening. This has been Lamestream Sports here on the 440 Sports Network.